present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Lymington Times, read by Brian Perkins.
A kennel was stolen from the garden of a house in Blackfield on Monday evening. The police are currently searching for leads.
Thank all of you who sent that. But now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Nick Clark and Simon Hoggart. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. Before we start round one, here's an item from the Daily Mail.
Bangkok. The Traffic Commission, trying to unclog the Thai capital's appalling congestion, has banned elephants from city streets and trunk roads.
Thank you, Gordon Clark of Hull, for that. Nick, nice to have you with us. Your question is this. Who teamed up to go bananas on gaffes?
I think it's one of those cabinet committee jobs led by the gaff hunter general David Hunt and his team of merry men. And one of the most curious things about this new cabinet committee, which is not actually designed to look after gaffes, it's long-term strategic planning for the Conservative Party. That's next week. One of the things about it is that it has on its number Jeremy Hanley himself. Now, I think this is a bit like putting Nick Leeson on the Bank of England Supervision Board or possibly Bruce Grobbelaar on the FA Committee of Inquiry. But I have this sort of daydream that what's likely to happen is that they'll have up somebody like Kenneth Clark who said something out of order. And if he doesn't give a satisfactory explanation, he will be required to be flogged on the lottery show. Probably by Elizabeth Peacock.
Ah, well, she might pop up in the programme later.
Oh, dear, I'm sorry.
Simon, you going to say something?
No, just the thought of being flogged by Elizabeth Peacock. The balls drop on the lottery.
I wondered what he was going to say there for a moment. This is John Major's team of gaffbusters appointed to watch out for banana skins in the lead-up to the next election. Kenneth Clark didn't understand the need for such a committee. After all, he said, our reputation is as safe as the Bank of England itself. Simon, your question now. Whose rambling rose got off to a rolling start?
Well, this is Tony Blair. The Rambling Rose is the Labour Party's new campaign to make people vote Labour, in spite of John Prescott. And Tony Blair began by saying that we should all vote Conservative. He said that basically there are too many socialist values in this country. This was a speech on Wednesday night, and what we needed was to be Conservatives. The theory is that everyone will vote Labour as a consequence of him saying that we should be more Conservative in this country. And the next stage is that he adopts Elizabeth Peacock's policy, and that everybody he doesn't like is flogged live on the National Lottery, or of course, if you're a blind date family like we are, then you have it on the corner of the screen while you're watching it going on. But it's Tony Blair.
Yes.
It said that this Rolling Rose thing, I saw it in Telegraph, and it said that the show would consist of a trio of comedians and a member of the opposition front bench. And I thought, it's bloody rough on comedians, isn't it?
Anyway, this was Labour leaders Tony Blair, who launched the Rolling Rose campaign, saying he aimed to put the fun back into politics and the social back into socialism. Let's just hope he hasn't put the bish back into rub. Jeremy, here's your question. Who may be overpaid and oversexed, but won't be over here?
The Yanks, those damn Yanks who take our women away with nylons and chewing gum. Whether together or separately, I don't know. But no, this is the long-running Clinton Major no politics, which started when the Tories supported Bush and then Labour supported Clinton. And then after Clinton got in, Labour went over to learn from the Democrats how to win elections and only succeeded in teaching the Democrats how to lose elections. And this has gone on with the Adams thing and Major not taking Clinton's calls, which is quite a big thing for Major because he doesn't get many calls. So to turn one down is a principled stand. And Clinton doesn't want to come to London for VE Day. He's going to go to Moscow, where there's a lot more burger bars and you don't have to listen to 4.5 hours of Vera Lynn.
I think you've covered that awfully well. This refers to the ongoing tiff between Major and Clinton, which resulted in the President refusing to come to London for VE Day. In the spirit of the occasion, the American contingent will instead turn up in 2 years' time. Bill Clinton. Thank you, veterans. Bill Clinton last spent any time in England as a Vietnam reservist serving in Oxford. If the Viet Cong had ever attacked Balliol College, he'd have been right there to save it. Alan, here's a piece of music.
So you put your arm round my waist.
Put your arms around my waist.
I promise I won't scream or cry.
I promise not to cry.
So you do the kissing and cuddling instead. Cause I'm shy, Mary Ellen, I'm shy.
Well, who left the old lady to spend more time with his old lady? Most difficult question of the week.
The next time any of us hears that the pound has hit the floor, we shall know it's not alone. I think this is the adventures of Rupert, who has been doing unspeakable things, although everybody's been speaking about them in the Bank of England.
Not Rupert Bear.
Has been, yes, totally. And on Monday, having said this will make no difference to me at all, my wife is standing by me, all that stuff, and like, he then went the next day after consultation.
That's very
Mark
good.
Mark actually didn't want him to go because he did such good work in saving Dewhurst's, the very successful Constantia steel fishing industry, which has branches all over Pompeii.
Give him a bonus for that. He's brightened the place up no end. Anyway, it's all about Rupert Pennant Ray, who left his job as deputy head of the Bank of England after it was revealed that he had an affair with Mary Ellen Synon. Synon by name and Synon by Monday if you're her ex-lover. Mr. Pennant Ray was reported to have made love on the carpet of his boss's washroom before admitting anything to him. He fully explained his position, but the... look, come on. But the governor had already worked it out from the pattern of dents in the Axminster.
Was the carpet a deep shag?
Oh! Well, the scores at the end of the first round are Nick and Simon, a well-earned four, but Alan and Jeremy, an even better earned five. Nick, your question again. What trial period was cut short?
It's not about Sydney Harbour Bridge, is it? No, it's not.
No, it isn't. Changes, isn't it?
It's about Wales. Well, the thing was, it's very sad, after 6 months of your life listening to a fraud trial, to be told that you didn't understand the evidence is a bit rich, isn't it, really?
It is, really.
And they were all sent home, and the chaps went back to their Belgravia mansions, on which they, of course, hadn't been carrying out any sort of mortgage fraud, obviously.
Quite right.
Or otherwise they wouldn't have got off, as they did.
It's a very odd thing, isn't it, saying that it's all too complicated for the jury to understand. I mean, it didn't happen in the Eric Cantona trial, did it? So, you've seen the video, but it's way above your heads, people.
He put his feet up, though. Oh, his hands up, didn't he? Yes.
Right. Tell us about Sydney Bridge.
There's a chap called Ian who changed his name to Sydney Harbour Bridge. Did you know that? Yeah. And it wasn't good news for him, because, in fact, he then lost his wife, his job, his house, and his car. And he's now going to change it again.
But they all threw themselves off him.
Yeah.
It's all about the fraud trial that was stopped as it was feared that the evidence was too complicated for the jury to follow. Proceedings became so long and dull, at one point snoring from the gallery nearly woke the judge up. The £2 million case was called to a halt by Judge Tom Crowther at Newport Crown Court, as jurors couldn't be expected to remember what was going on. He reckoned his summing up would take 14 days alone. In fact, it's quite common for those involved in fraud hearings to have trouble remembering things. You're ahead of me, I think. Poor old Ernest Saunders could hardly recall his own medical history. Simon, where was one slowed down by a touch of the squatters?
Oh, right, this is Her Majesty the Queen in South Africa.
Right.
And she met Nelson Mandela for talks. He said, what do you do if you have this fat, horrible wife who's a great national embarrassment? And she gave him Prince Andrew's phone number. But my favourite bit of the whole trip was when these four naked women danced in front of her. There they were, absolutely naked except for little white tipex.
Yes.
For listeners at home should know that I'm pointing my fingers in a sort of vaguely busty direction. And they're flopping around. The Queen, who'd looked completely stony-faced at first, watched this for a while and then turned to someone and said, goodness me,
How very energetic.
This was the first official visit by the Queen to South Africa since 1947. A visit to a poor squatter camp had to be abandoned when Her Majesty was mobbed by happy, smiling people in the street. It was just like touring at home, except for the happy, smiling people. There was one minor hitch when Prince Philip asked Nelson Mandela how Winnie was and hoped her football team hadn't been involved in any of the kind of scandals we've seen in England lately. Jeremy, have a listen to this.
With your rhythm stick, hit me, hit me. Das ist gut, say, fantastic. Hit me, hit me, hit me. Hit me with your rhythm stick. It's nice to be a lunatic. Hit me, hit me, hit me.
Well, we've had a lot of this already, but your question is, who thinks the lottery is too good for them?
Two mad Tory MPs, Elizabeth Peacock being one and another one, has said that the way to punish offenders is to flog them live on the lottery because the humiliation will stop them doing it again. But it does occur to you that Anthea Turner goes through the humiliation of presenting it week after week and is obviously a complete recidivist and it has no deterrent value whatsoever.
Absolutely right. This is MP Elizabeth Peacock, who wants to see criminals flogged on TV during the National Lottery draw. The organisers tried to launch their scratch card lottery this week, but the equipment wasn't ready as the tickets had to go back to be waterproofed. And that's so winners can be ducked to check whether they're witches. Still, they should dry out nicely when they're burnt at the stake live on Jackanory. Alan, how was the county set shaken up?
I think this is Gummo, isn't it? He's reintroduced Rutland, and he said that Berkshire will cease to exist. Berkshire's turned into places like Reading and Maidenhead. We're all going to be city-states.
It struck me as being as a metaphor for that Princess Di story when she ripped in half the picture of the two Barbie ladies.
What?
Shane and Sia. Did you read this one?
No.
Apparently Princess Di caught her sons looking at a picture of the two ladies with very pneumatic equipment.
Yes.
And they were fighting over this, so she thought the best thing to do was to rip them in half. And I thought it was a little bit like Hereford and Worcester, really. One got Hereford and one got Worcester.
When they said Gummer was going to abolish Burkes, I thought they meant Hanley and Clark.
Well, that's what I've got written down here, so let's move on. And that brings us to the end of the second round, actually, and the score's quite interesting because they stay more or less in the same place because Nick and Simon are 8, but Alan and Jeremy are still in the lead with 9. We start round 3 with a letter to the Maidenhead Advertiser.
I first wrote to Reader's Viewpoint last year regarding National Trust land at Northtown Moor where people walk their dogs. Special bins are provided by Windsor and Maidenhead Council, especially for dogs' excrement. Why, oh why, don't people use them?
Anyway, thank you, M. Trumbull, for that item. And we move on to Nick again. Nick, what operation was carried out on the cheap?
I think this might be Mr. Gruby, who, in between emptying toilets at Newham General Hospital, does a bit of brain surgery on the side. He always washes up well between, though, I'm told. But poor Mr. Gruby, he was sitting in on this operation, and as one might, you know, you said, put your hand in that clamp there. This wretched woman was having a hip operation, so he did. And he told the newspapers about it, and the consequence was that he got the sack. Seems very unkind.
It's all about hospital porter Dave Gruby, who helped perform an operation at Newham General in East London. During a hip replacement, Dave was asked to pull the patient's leg. So he told her she was in safe hands with the new NHS. It's even becoming quite common now for junior doctors to take the task of hospital cleaners. Obviously, there's less job satisfaction, but the hours are shorter, and the extra money does come in handy. Simon, now here's a piece of music for you.
And all at once it seems so nice. The folks are throwing shoes and rice. You hurry to a spot that's just a dot on the map. You're hooked, you're cooked, you're caught in the tender trap.
Your question is, who took steps every night to avoid the benefits trap?
It was this chap, wasn't it, trying to avoid the CSA.
That's right.
So he installed his wife in the attic.
Well, she lived next door, wasn't she? She was sort of... Was she next door?
She was upstairs and...
Well, she was in the attic. Well, sometimes she was next door, but mostly she was in the attic. Unrolling the roof insulation.
Yeah, before today they went out and got separate milk, didn't they? But that's all been stopped now.
The sad thing is that she then, after all this effort he had made hiding his wife in the flat above and putting in a special trapdoor, she ran off with a neighbour who presumably knocked a hole through from next door.
I don't know how they could have missed this ladder, because we had a loft ladder, and the loft ladder was larger when it was folded than when it was down. Do you remember you had to crawl around your hands and knees to avoid banging your head on the ladder that was in the ceiling? And she came down every night. I mean, the racket must have been enormous. No, it said in the mail. She came down... they were newlyweds. And she came down every night down this ladder. She had to take up the carpet and remove the floorboards. It was extraordinary.
No wonder she ran off her next-door neighbour.
I think the next-door neighbour got extremely excited. Lying there, listening to the ladder coming down.
Maybe he offered to put in a serving hatch for her instead.
He had the money. He's deputy governor of the Bank of England.
This is all about Steve Howarth, who constructed a hidden trap door between his flat and the one above to convince the CSA and the DSS that he wasn't really living with his second wife. Otherwise, he'd have had to pay more child maintenance and lose his benefit check. The wife would wait until dark to climb down a rope ladder into his bed. Well, at least that makes a change from swinging off the chandelier. She's now divorcing him as well, but still lives upstairs, while his first wife and kids have agreed to move into the basement so that Carla Lane can base a sitcom on them. Jeremy, why have we been rocked into believing there's life on Mars?
Oh, they found in Antarctica, they found a bit of stone, and it's from Mars, and it proves there's life on Mars, because there's a stamp on it. No, they found that there's a rock from Mars and it's full of amino acids and glucose and thick, thick chocolate. Help you work, rest and become obese.
I mean, if the Martians are sending us their life forms, it does account for Michael Howard, doesn't it?
Can we believe this story? I mean, they found a stone in Antarctica. I mean, have you seen Antarctica? Can you imagine how many stones they must have got through to find one that said, my God, this has been on Mars?
Alan, your question now. Who rewrote her family history after Sis scaled new heights?
This is the Brontes.
It is.
Emily Bronte wrote a sequel to Wuthering Heights. And she ran downstairs through this trapdoor they'd fitted because of Heathcliff on the roof. And she ran downstairs and said, Charlotte, look, here is my new novel. And Charlotte said, you want to throw that in the fire? And she did. This is because Charlotte wanted to protect herself from this wonderful new book she'd written.
Right.
It was Jane Eyre.
Now.
Publishers saw the first draft and said, this is a wonderful novel, Miss Bronte. If you'd only take out all the effing and blinding, we've got a winner.
This is the claim that Emily Bronte wrote a sequel to Wuthering Heights, but that her sister Charlotte burnt it, thinking it was too vulgar. Charlotte also censored much of her sister's poetry, so sadly we can only guess at the second line of her immortal piece that starts, Three Sisters Who Lived at the Vicar's. Answers on a postcard, please. Third Bronte sister, Anne, wrote with less success under the pen name of Acton. She was much underrated, said her descendant, Mrs. Hangerlane Gyratory System Bronte. We've come to the end of another round, and the scores at the end of round three are much the same as they've been all through. It was Nick and Simon at 12, but Alan and Jeremy are still in the lead by one with 13. Before we start the final round, here's an item heard on Radio 4's Call Nick Ross. A gay vicar called to say...
Before I was outed, I was living my life at half cock.
Let's say thank you, Terence Frisbee, for sending us that. Nick, no connection. With Nick Ross, that is. Will you have a listen to this? your question now, Nick. Whose gas production is adding to global warming?
I think this may have to do with termites. Now, actually, I was very lucky today. I was privileged to speak to the scientist who has been inspecting termites in West Africa. And he told me a lot of very interesting things about how he spent 5 years with little plastic files collecting termite farts. Now, he has discovered that termite farts are responsible for 20% of all the methane gas produced on this earth. Now, this threw up a number of questions in my mind, like, you know, if you killed termites, could we go on driving cars and having power stations? And he said no. And I said, well, what about using termites in the boots of cars to help power them? And he thought the technology for this wasn't fully advanced yet. And so we had to leave it at that. But this is what it is. It's termites. And they're at it.
It is termites.
Isn't that strange? I mean, there's the professional interviewer. That's the first thing that occurred to him. What occurred to me was who farts the other 80%? we're different sorts of people, Nick and I. I can tell that.
I mean, how do you get it to fart in a test tube?
Put the test tube under it and then feed it lentils for a day. The other thing is that the bloke who does it says that he had to smuggle it through customs.
He yes, he does.
I mean, it makes you want to avoid the green channel, doesn't it?
He does. He smuggles it through customs with a little label on it saying forest air.
How do you know the termites aren't faking it? I mean,
he'd be bound to know.
No, he wouldn't. It's only a small file.
You're quite right, Nick.
What was that, Barry?
You're quite right, Nick. This is the news that global warming is largely caused by methane produced by termites. Scientists have just discovered 3,500 species of African termites that are incapable of controlling production because of their high-fiber diet. You'd think with every termite in Africa making methane all day, they'd have wondered what the noise was.
Well, that's better out than in, Barry.
It's the wives I feel sorry for. That's better. Simon, your question now. What road signs might indicate accidents ahead?
Yes, it's a... It turns out that astrology does work after all, and that there are certain star signs which make you much more likely to have road accidents, and the one that makes you most likely to have road accidents is Aries. The ram.
Yes.
So actually, yes, near where we live, there's a thing called the Impact School of Motoring. But that's it. Yes, certain star signs are much more likely to make you bump into your fellow man.
You're quite right, Simon. This was a survey that revealed that drivers born under the sign of Aries, the ram, are more likely to have accidents, and those who are Pisces do quite badly as well. Prominent Arians include Neil Kinnock, who was banned from driving, and Geoffrey Archer, who drove off the M25 and was banned from writing. That was nothing to do with his accident. The magistrate just thought he might as well grab the chance while he had it. Jeremy, who tried to program a washing machine 1/8?
This was in The Sun, and it was on page 3, and I remember that it was on page 3 because there was a very interesting article about foreign aid on the page. No, there was a washing... Hot Point. Can we say the name? Hot Point. Sent yes. A man out to fix the washing machine, and I can't tell you whether it was in the morning or the afternoon, but they... He turned up drunk and smashed the place up and then tried to leave. And they held him back. They wouldn't let him go. In a rather touching display of responsibility, they said, no, you can't go, you're too drunk. Oh, pardon me. Too many termites for dinner. Yeah, they tried to stop this man from going off in his car because they said, you're too drunk to drive. But if a psychopathic washing machine drunken lunatic was smashing my house up, I wouldn't be saying, oh, no, I'll call you a cab. You know, no fit state.
When the couple tried to call Hot Point, the engineers smashed the phone, then brawled with Mr. Quinn and broke their banisters. Eventually, they got through to Hot Point while their man was going berserk, smashing up the conservatory. With so many fixtures that needed fixing, Hot Point offered to send them a goalkeeper. Alan, what's got 9 long lives and 4 short legs?
Oh, this is a marvellous story. America has produced a cat called a munchkin, which has very little legs. It doubles as a draft excluder. I think they're probably going to work on one with no legs at all. It's a terribly sad story, that is, little face there in the Telegraph. I'm not sure, actually, whether it was genetic engineering. It may just be an accident, or I may have walked into something. But anyway, they had this huge cat with these tiny little feet.
Yes. It's, that was so sweet.
They say it can turn around very fast.
The beauty, Alan, is that he doesn't have to turn around at all. You see, the beauty is that you feel sorry for it. You shouldn't. If being chased by a dog, it can go instantly into reverse. This is a reversing cat.
Yeah, but what's going to happen? I mean, the knock-on effects of this, that there will, mice will start beginning to develop very small legs to be able to turn around faster than this cat. There's a huge chain there, Nick. We're at the other end of it. I shall end up with very little legs as a result of this cat.
Where do termites come in this chain?
Towards the rear. Now, this is about a new breed of cat from America that has very short, hairy legs. The Munchkin Mutant Cat has the Latin name Felix Ernie Wisus. And they're great for catching mice, but you do have to be careful not to let them walk over any traps, especially if you want the males to breed. Now, ladies and gentlemen, before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the team's brought along. Nick, have you got a cutting for us?
This is Irish, Barry. It says the chart of a patient admitted to Castle Bar General Hospital had been mixed up with that of another patient. The Minister for Health, Mr. Howland, said that the mix-up was temporary and quickly rectified. The patient, Mrs. Mary Ellen Butler of County Mayo, who died later, did not suffer as a result.
I like a happy ending. Simon.
This is from the London Evening Standard the other day. A Japanese mugger armed with a crossbow, an axe, a knife, a stun gun, a smoke grenade, and a can of mace was arrested by police after he tripped over his feet.
Jeremy.
This is from the Scotsman, and it relates to complaints to the BBC. A complaint against Emma Freud's Radio 1 show was also upheld after a listener criticised an item discussing the number of calories in semen. Perceptions of unfairness accounted for almost a quarter of all criticism, closely followed by poor taste.
Alan, what have you brought for us?
Well, Jeremy Hardy is about to be closely followed by poor taste. Mine is from the Mid Wales County Times and Express. It says, Bernard Neil Davis of Llandrindod Wells has been given 80 hours community service and ordered to pay £300 compensation after pleading guilty to assault. Mr. Timothy Van Rees defending said, Mr. Davis is normally a passive man, but even the most mild-mannered person may lose his temper when his teeth are handed around a restaurant before being jammed between the cheeks of another man's bottom.
Well, were false teeth, were they, presumably?
Yes, oh yes.
Let's look at the final scores, which are brilliant, because teams have tied at 17 all. And I think that's great. Before we leave you, here's a letter from the Hereford Courier sent in by David Olivier of Hereford.
I fear that editorial cuts to my letter last week have produced some confusion. The letter you printed over my signature, applauding the destruction of Leinster by its local government, represented not my views, but those of the late Hermann Göring.
And on that cheery note, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Nick Clark, Simon Hoggart and Jeremy Hardy. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson. The producer was Alad Evans.